This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Seahawks injury report is out, and it's not necessarily good news if you were like me and hoping to see KJ Wright practice today. He did not. Two straight days he has not practiced. I think it would be considered a long shot for him to be available for this game after he's missed the first two games. And Ethan Posick, who has a sprained ankle, and Justin Britt, who has a shoulder injury. Neither of those guys practiced as well. So Seattle looking to go into this game. They should have Bobby Wagner and Trey Flowers back, but they're still going to be shorthanded.
Yeah, the injury's starting to pile up. But, you know, look, the defense sure responded well last week to all those injuries and played really well. I was so impressed with the defense. And once again, going into that game, you thought, oh, it's going to be a mess defensively. And it was quite the opposite. It was the other way around, actually. So hopefully they're – sometimes, you know, when you have injuries – first of all, I just remember the view from the inside is, oh, okay, he's hurt. All right, well, we'll go with this guy then. You know, it wasn't like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? There's no hand-wringing or anything like that. But it also causes other guys to sharpen up, man. You got to – the word step up or phrase step up has been used a lot lately. And I don't know if Pete said that or – I know Rabel said it on the broadcast. It's just one of those things that, you know, these guys that are younger and that are new, they've got to put on their big boy pants, go out there and play like a starter.
Yeah, and at least you got Michael Kendricks for one more week in the appeals process, the NFL suspension. So I thought maybe he was just going to play the one game in Chicago. So they have him. He can take over for KJ Wright. I would just think that the bigger concern, again, is offensively, where you got two offensive linemen who might be out. Now, you have one returning in Fluker. I don't know. How has Sweezy been playing? Has he been doing okay?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you saw the holding penalty that called back the Chris Carson screen. I think he got a hold the other night that was fairly obvious. And, you know, I don't know if he's the same J.R. Sweezy. I've always viewed him as he's kind of a I don't want to compare it to the average of Mike Zunino, but like when Mike Zunino gets a hold of one of them, he's going to hit it out of the park. Okay,
so he's the football equivalent of Mike Zunino. He's really good on some plays,
but he's not batting like 175.
Yeah,
he's batting more like, you know,
220,
650.
When he
like
gets
that.
A hold of a guy, the guy's going to go 10 yards in the opposite direction. But his miss rate might be a little higher than other offensive linemen. Not that it's Zunino-level strikeouts.
No, yeah, I'm not talking about that. But so that's just kind of how I've viewed him. But, you know, he's kind of on a rail, in other words. But, I mean, he's better than, you know, Mike as far as his average goes.
When you look at, and you mentioned the view from inside, a team preparing, and look, they're going to have guys that will step up. You'll have Joey Hunt play center. If Britt's unable to go, you'll probably have Sweezy flip from right guard, where he's been filling in for Fluker, to left guard, because Fluker looks like he's going to be back. From the outside, I look at it and I'm like, man, this is a pretty desperate situation for Seattle, that they're 0-2, they're coming back home. If they win this game and go down to Arizona, and the Cardinals look to be fairly bad, if they win these next two games, you feel like they've recovered from a really difficult start with a lot of injuries. If they lose this game, it'll be the first time they've been 0-3 since 2002, that you'll feel that kind of things are starting to spin out of control and that maybe the bottom has dropped out of this team. In terms of remaining relevant in a playoff chase, I think there's more pressure on this game in that way than I've felt on a game under the Seahawks have had in quite some time under Pete Carroll.
Well, it's like we said in the first segment, if you lose on the road, that's understandable. Unless it's a really, really crummy team. I mean, look, right now, even if you went to Cleveland and lost there, I mean, road games are tough. But for this team to lose at home, then, you know, and Dallas is a sort of mediocre team. They're 1-1. They struggled in their first week with their offense. They kind of found themselves a little bit last week. But, yeah, if you lose this one at home, then, yeah, you've got a problem. And with all these injuries mounting up, too, and I wonder what's going on, man. It's just amazing, all the number. And they're more like tissue, you know, it's groin, hamstring. Yeah, it just makes you wonder what's going on.
Yeah, even Russell Wilson was on the injury report yesterday. But he said today when he talked to the media that the hamstring was fine and he should be good to go. But, yeah, it's when you're trying to find the running game and you're trying to get better pass protection, you lose two starting linemen, and you're going against a Dallas team that has 9 sacks in 2 games, number 2 in the NFL, DeMarcus Lawrence and other guys, an assortment of guys with 1, it's really going to make it more difficult.
How do we feel this team plays when they get in these situations, these sort of gut check games? And, under Pete Carroll, I've thought that that's been one of their strengths, is that they've been able, whether it's going down to play Carolina in 2013, whether it's going down to play even the game that they have where they went to Chicago in Russell's rookie season, when they've gotten into moments where you're sort of, it's now or never, if they're going to make a push, I don't remember times when they've come up short. Last year, they lost that game at home to the Rams, but that was something different altogether. The fact is, I think that in most situations when the Seahawks in the regular season have come toward this do-or-die moment, they've tended to be really successful, going all the way back to Pete Carroll's first year when they played the Rams at home and won the division at 7-9, which at the time, I think we all looked at it and you're like, oh, do you even want to win the division? You get the better draft position. That set up Seattle, and they had one of the most memorable postseason wins in franchise history.
Well, I just the team turns over so much that, you know, how does this team... This team's a lot different than the personalities that are, you know, each year. But with Pete Carroll, he's always done a great job of not talking about the guy that's hurt. Talk about the guy that's actually playing. And a lot of, I think, other NFL coaches have fallen in that same suit, that they try to do that. But, you know, look, you got Russell Wilson always looking at the positive side of things, always upbeat. No negativity. And then the other thing is, you get a group of young guys that are very hopeful. And I keep going back to Ken Norton saying that he has a very high opinion, and we're going to talk to one of them, Puna Ford, of this rookie class. He said they stay late, they come early, they don't complain, they soak up, they ask questions, they soak up all the knowledge the vets give them. So it's a good, resilient group that's going to go out. And I imagine about now they're starting to get a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, being 0-2, and, you know, like the frustration that Antonio Brown voiced there, you know, you get tired of losing. They haven't, you know, and this is silly, but they've lost their last 7 games, if you want to count the preseason. You know, going back to Arizona, it's been a long time since we've seen this team win, so I would imagine they're getting tired of that, and you might see just a little bit of an edge, a little bit of an attitude coming out of that tunnel on Sunday.
Yeah, you'd hope so, and you'd think that being back at home, the home opener, that that'll give them a lift, but yeah, it's a tough one, because as much as I know that Russell looks at things positively, and usually I look at things negatively, and I surprised myself during the first segment with they're not, if they are to beat Dallas, and they are favored by 1.5, That take them to 1-2, and then you go to Arizona. You know that Arizona's down this year. They got a new coach. They lost to the Rams last week, 34-0, and they lost at home to the Redskins. They look really challenged offensively, and so it's not inconceivable to think that they'll be 2-2 after that game. And then you're probably going to lose to the Rams the next week, but then you have the game in London against Oakland. Oakland starting out 0-2, and then Detroit 0-2 after a bye week. So conceivably, they could be 4-3. Now, the flip side of it, if I'm being honest, I mean, this looks like an average team to me at best. And when you take an average team and you add injuries into the mix, then you're suddenly below average. I'm oversimplifying it. But, I mean, there's a chance that this team's just not very good.
It's a decent.
I mean, they're 0-2. I mean, to be blunt about it, I mean, yeah, and I like what you're saying about Pete Carroll's teams historically resilient. They bounce back when they're in tough spots. It sounds good, but like Dave is saying, I mean, there's so many new players now, new coaches, that it's a whole different deal.
And a lot of this, in my mind, is going to come down to Russell Wilson. Can Russell get this offense going better than it has the first two games?
Well, and then will we. Monday, when we talk about the game, let's say they lose a narrow one to the Cowboys. Do you think we can fairly evaluate the running game and the passing game with two offensive linemen out from an offensive line that's challenged anyway?
No, but here's the thing about the offense is that they made a lot of changes in the offseason. They changed the offensive line coach. They changed their offensive coordinator. You got some different personnel in here, but they changed the personality in some ways, I think. They let two of their top three pass catchers go. Jimmy Graham and Paul Richardson left in free agency. Doug Baldwin, who was their leading receiver, is hurt right now. They've changed the personality, yet they haven't been able to run it. And the storyline coming out of this, if they don't win it, is that this offense and all the changes that they tried, it's gotten worse before we've even seen it hint at getting better. And they haven't, their attempt to reinstitute the run game has been a failure so far. I mean, that all of the resources, and look, two games is not some sort of final decision about where everything is headed and whether all of these changes were worth it. But right now, their offense, which bogged down and kind of collapsed on Russell Wilson in December of last season, that offense doesn't look significantly better after all the changes they made in the offseason.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, look, you can only go with what's happened, though. I mean, right now, I mean, they have not gotten, I said this earlier, like, I think a microcosm of what the season is the running game, and how, like, you haven't gotten to that second level to make a move. And, you know, there just hasn't been any kind of sustained success. So I feel like the whole thing is still sort of up in the air. It's tough to answer the questions, you know, and that's what I really hope for. And actually, I saw a little bit of logic in what Tom was talking about today on the huddle, is that, you know, that he would rather see like an 8, 10, 11, 12 play drive rather than just a you know, the one throw for a touchdown. And you said, sign me up for the touchdown, Danny, and I get it. But, you know, and it is kind of a dumb thing to say. You'd rather do, but there just has been no flow whatsoever. Now, look, you know, a play here, a play there, something goes wrong, but it's not been that. It's been like you've taken some big shots and scored, but then, you know, in between that, it's just been really choppy, and there's just nothing to indicate that. And, you know, also a couple of the runs I saw, it looked like zone blocking. You know, they're running that, you know, shotgun handoff, kind of a zone blocking. It looks a lot like last year. In the preseason, we saw that trap play where the guard's pulling Ethan Posick. You know, you've seen more lanes to run in, and that was one of the things Chris Carson said in the preseason, and that's what was so encouraging and why I was so excited. Going into that, it was like, there's more lanes to run, and all the running backs were like, yeah, this makes sense. And then now, all of a sudden, but you know, you also have to ask the question, have they really dedicated themselves to running the ball like they really should or really want to? And that's I thought Tom asked a good question today, like, how hard, and I'm going to ask Moyer tonight on Hawks Live, how hard is it to call a play, even though everything on your card and all your research during the week indicates this is a pass, you should pass here, how hard is it to call a run? Because, honestly, that's the theme. What's going on? It's kind of like the touchdown, or the interception, I should say, down in Peoria, you know, in the Super Bowl. Like, everything there said throw the ball, you know, and everybody's talking about running. But if you're an offensive coordinator, you know, 32 out of 32 would have said that defense, where we are, the situation, which was we knew we had to throw it one time in order to get all four downs, it said pass. And yet you have to force yourself to call a run, and I think it's difficult. And I think that's what happened the other night on Monday night with Brian Schottenheimer, that he got, I think he just couldn't bring himself to do it. And then, like I said, the game explodes, it gets away from you, and then, you know, next thing you know, you look back on it and do the autopsy on the game, and it's like, oh, shoot, we should have done this.
Should they be running? Should they be running when everything says to pass? In that sort of, should you have the discipline, or should you move toward the matchup where you think, like, hey, this is where we have the advantages we throw in this situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good question, Danny. I mean, look, that's why I think it's difficult that, you know, look, every play should work if you block. Now, you don't want bad matchups, and that's why, you know, on the play in the Super Bowl, you know, you're theoretically having a receiver blocking a linebacker, which is a loss. Or a defensive end, you know, you don't want bad matchups. So as long as you can get decent matchups, I'd say the answer now is yes. I mean, it's a good question. I think that, yes, it points to you must run the ball. And all I care about, all I want to get to, is play action pass, because that's where Russell is the best, and that's where the two best plays they've had today in this year were play action passes.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Puna Ford, they've just gotten wrapped up with meetings. We're going to talk to him. He's going to join us here in the lounge next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and more. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, and the Seahawks getting ready for the Cowboys, and you hope that they get a break when it comes to their health, but it doesn't look like that's happening, at least not on their offensive line. Justin Britt and Ethan Posick, neither one of those guys practiced. Second straight day, both guys have sat out practice. Posick with an ankle injury, Justin Britt with a shoulder injury. The good news, Bobby Wagner and Trey Flowers both continue to practice full speed. Same with Delano Kill. So Seattle getting up to full speed or closer to full speed on their defense. KJ Wright remains out. The question of kind of how you approach and attack a game plan, Seattle, from one sense, is not in that unique of a position. This is a team that tends to struggle on the road in September. And overall now 2-12 in September road games under Pete Carroll. We know how successful that they've tended to be. This has been the most successful run in franchise history. At the same time, the way this team has changed in terms of its makeup, and that you don't have that bedrock of a defense that has everything really was built on for a period of about 5 years. It feels like they're in a much more precarious situation right now, in large part just because we don't know the track record of a lot of the players. They have a lot of new guys in different spots that they're relying on.
Well, again, I'll just say it. I think if you lose at home, then it's a problem. I don't care what the injury situation is. So then we'll know. There's five teams right now that are 0-2. Giants, Houston, Raiders, Buffalo and Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. There might be another one in there. But, you know, on the road against, and we'll see, you know, it may be easily explainable later when you look back. Denver's 2-0 right now, man. They got a pretty good last-minute win over the Raiders at home, and I don't know if that's a good sign or not. The Bears barely lost on the road to the Packers. They totally blew that game, actually. I think Mitchell Trubisky's a lot better than everybody thought he was. He may be one of the bigger surprises this year, but you know, we'll see how that all plays out. I don't see him losing. I don't care how many injuries you have. I feel like with the home field and the way some of the guys have stepped up, and I'm mostly thinking about the defense, if they can just get some kind of a pattern going on offense, my gosh, what do they got? 5 picks now?
Mm-hmm.
5 interceptions already? They had 12 last year. So, I mean, that's another thing that you would have never thought would happen with a young defense, that guys are pulling the trigger, so to speak. So, you know, I think Bradley McDougald's been even better, and like maybe, I don't want to start heaping pressure on him and talking about comparing him to Cam Chancellor, but I've heard some of his tackles that he makes on the field up in the booth. He's a hitter. And he is able to play the ball. So there's a lot of good things to like. I just think they're too good. Again, I'll stick with, I think their personnel is too good for them to go 0-3.
Well, defensively, they played fine Monday night. I don't think anybody had any issues with what was going on there, especially with the two Pro Bowl linebackers being out, and they did fine. Yeah, the running game, just to get back to that briefly, the one thing, I don't think we really know if they're going to be a good running team, bad running team, or something in between. And I know average per carry right now, they're a little less than last year. But it's just like, generally speaking, and then also with Chris Carson in particular, you just want to see it. I mean, just go ahead and run the ball, commit to running 25 times a game. And I know that number, and I heard Hasselbeck talking about this morning with Schottenheimer, is 53 with pass completions and run attempts, and it's a winning formula. Well, we haven't seen that yet. And let's just not only just give the ball to Carson, but just commit to the run and see what you have. And again, I'm a little concerned about how we're going to be able to evaluate it if you're missing two of your starting offensive linemen, with Posick missing his second practice and Britt missing his second, too. But Dave, you mentioned, I mean, you look at the parity in the NFC. Pete Carroll mentioned this yesterday, too. Only two teams right now that are 2-0, and again, it's early, the Rams and Tampa Bay. And then there's a couple teams that are 1-0-1, Green Bay and Minnesota, because they tied this last week. So the Seahawks can get back in it in a hurry here. The schedule's favorable in the next 4 or 5 weeks. And if they can get right around .500, they'll be right in the mix.
When you see Seattle, Dave, you talked about the Seahawks and their offense, the project this year being help Russell. So far, it's been tough to find help for him, and I think that goes back to they have to, given the investments they made in the offseason, they need to get some returns out of this running game.
Yeah, well, and that, and also some protection. Now, some of it's his fault, But also, you got a team coming in here with, they got 9 sacks.
They do.
The Cowboys in 2 games. We have 3. So, there's another test this week with DeMarco Lawrence, who really his rookie year, he didn't play that much and didn't get any sacks, but the last 3, he's gotten 25.5. Well, he has 1 this year. So, but, you need to give him some protection. He needs to take care of himself. But the running game is what I think helps him the most, because the best plays that they've had have been those play-action passes, which, you know, sometimes they're run having not established the run. You know, you're running those plays, and they're working, right? Russell's really good at that, but, you know, he needs to help himself too. Look, Russell didn't have a good game. You know, there was a lot of times where the ball either, you know, didn't come out, or he just needed to ditch it, or, you know, he didn't find the right receivers. You know, I saw a couple times where, you know, it was 3rd and 5 and he's looking at the route that the guy's going deep on, whereas, you know, try to find the guys who are running the underneath routes and get, you know, get a stick route, you know, for 6 when you're 3rd and 5. So, yeah, some of it's on him. He's not helping himself either. But I just always, I would say I err on the side of, I don't want to say feeling sorry for Russell, but like not blaming him, just because there's so much chaos going on around him and he's, you know, not able to get a running game going and not able to have any time in the pocket. And that has a tendency to fluster quarterbacks. And that's the thing I think that that has been frustrating for him, and why I don't really fault him that much. I know it needs to come out, but when people start going, man, what's the matter with Russell Wilson, this, and I'm like, come on, man. There's a lot of other things that could go right as well.
That's definitely true. I find myself wondering 2 things when I watch Russell play. The first one is, how hard is this for him to adjust to a new offense? He's had a change in offensive coordinators for the first time in his career. This is the first time that he's playing for somebody different, and there's got to be an adjustment period for that. I mean, you look at teams all across last year. What, the Atlanta Falcons go from being this almost record-setting offense with Kyle Shanahan as their coordinator to having Steve Sarkisian, and things change dramatically. There is a learning curve. That's a difficult adjustment to make there. And the second thing I find myself wondering is, we see it as a fresh start. Russell still might be having, whether it's scar tissue or PTSD from all of the hits he's taken in the past few years. Like, there's got to be a little bit of that. The number of times that the bad protection from the past years, there has to be a residual effect from that in terms of the trust and faith you have in the protection that's in front of you.
He sure is a tough dude. I'll tell you, those hits he took in Denver really concerned me. And so I'm walking out to the buses. I was like, dude, are you okay? I didn't say anything to him. And I'm like, he's just strolling along. Everything's fine. So, yeah, it's you worry about him. And, like, those are going to start to add up. And I think you're right. They have a cumulative effect. And you just come to expect that. You don't want to ever expect that. But, you know, again, Russell's attitude is the best. You were talking about earlier about resiliency and coming back from this. I don't think you could have a quarterback who has a better attitude than him. Have we ever seen him throw a little tissy fit at his coach on the sidelines, like Tom Brady?
He was a little upset the other night about something to do with a timeout.
Yeah, it was in the fourth quarter there. It was before the interception, and they called timeout. He wanted a chance to fix the alignment. They called the timeout because they were misaligned. That was why it was. I took that as more of the heat of a moment. Like, he thought he could get something done, and the coach is saying, "Hey, we want to take a break here and make sure that we get set. We don't want to waste this play because we're not lined up properly."
I liked his answer today when he was asked about Pete Carroll yesterday, thinking that Russell's trying too hard, and Russell was like, "Well, I'm always going to try my hardest." You know, I mean, it's kind of like a little kid. I appreciated what he had to say. That, well, I'm not sure what coach thinks, but I'm always going to be trying really hard. So, and you appreciate that about him. I'm with you guys, though. I think maybe he has gotten a little gun-shy. Who knows? We'll find out more about him this Sunday. But, I mean, can you imagine being back there, you know, having one eye on guys coming at you from all different directions, and then also trying to read what's going on downfield with a bunch of new receivers that he's not used to being with, and he doesn't have his safety valve with Doug Baldwin anymore?
You know what? You're talking about the cumulative. That was the one thing, and I guess I don't even know if we've mentioned this week, but you could see his eyes coming down. He was looking at the pass rush as much as I've ever seen him in that Chicago game. So, and again, understandably so. You know, he's trying to not get killed. So that's something I think he's been able to, and that, to me, what a tough guy. To be able to stand in the pocket and, you know, everything's exploding around you and you know you're going to take a hit like he took from Von Miller at one point. Man, and for him to keep his eyes downfield, it's pretty brave. It's pretty awesome what he does. I'd say he's a tough guy.
The other thing, there's no doubt about how tough he is. The other thing that I think has been a trait that he's had throughout is his ability to fix mistakes. And the coaches will talk about it like don't be a mistake repeater and that sort of thing. But from his rookie year, there was a pretty systematic improvement about things. They went to a game in Carolina, I think it was week 5, and that was as close, I think, as the Seahawks had come to thinking about, like, maybe we're going to end up going back to Matt Flynn, and their third down passing numbers had been terrible the week before, and they got significantly better. And you've seen it, their ability to systematically address, and Russell's ability to systematically address any shortcomings, any flaws that they have, has been there. We do get the opportunity each day out here for Seahawks practice to talk to a Seahawk, our Seahawks spotlight, and we're being joined here by Puna Ford. We'll have the intro music play right now.
This is the Player Spotlight, every week throughout the season with Danny, Dave, and more. Brought to you by Hornitos Premium Tequila and Clearwater Casino Resort.
We got Puna Ford with us right now. Puna, how are you?
Good, how y'all doing?
We're doing very well.
Jess is like she's in the pits at the IndyCar. She puts on the headset, hands you a water, you're good to go.
Producers produce.
Yeah.
Yeah. How have things been going for you so far, man?
It's been going pretty good. You know, I'm just taking as much information as I can from the older guys and just running with it pretty much.
So you were a favorite during camp. I know of like your teammates, everybody was talking about. When you made the team, who did you get the call from?
Coach Hurt called me.
Oh, Coach did? Okay. Because I know, who was it that got Bobby Wagner?
That was Austin Calitro.
Oh, Calitro. That's right. Okay. Anyway, your teammates loved you, and it sounds like during the preseason you made a big impression on them. You just went in and balled out. How did it feel coming in as a rookie, and what was the big difference for you from college to pro?
I mean, I guess I feel like I had a lot to prove, honestly. So I always carry myself with that chip on my shoulder. And I just went to work every day and just grinded it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you, being an undrafted guy and making the team, do you look at all the rest of the teams and kind of think, well, okay, I'm going to show you what you missed out on?
Oh, yeah, that's like, honestly, that's how I feel about everything football, like going into football, like as far as practice. You know, even during preseason, like during the games, even just now, I'm still trying to prove that they missed out on the great player.
Well, so I take it you're probably watching the draft, and you're the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, and as each selection continued, were you just more mystified as to what was going on, why no one would take Puna Ford?
I mean, no, not really. I honestly, like that week leading up to the draft, I did an interview, and I said, this is exactly what I said. I said, if I don't get drafted, I'm not going to be surprised.
Well, that just, yeah, it's hard to believe, though, the way you're playing now, that somebody wouldn't have taken a chance on you. You think it's because of your size, your height?
I mean, yeah, it's been like that since high school, honestly.
You know, you should talk to about that. Russell Wilson. he's still getting talked about because of his height.
I mean, I don't know why. I feel like, you feel me, he done proved himself, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the other thing, for a defensive player, after, you know, I always wanted to be taller, but after playing linebacker in the NFL, like, I wanted to be shorter because your leverage, right? I mean, that definitely helps you.
Yeah, a lot, especially, like, playing defensive line, leverages everything. Low man wins.
Yeah, you probably don't have guys telling you, hey, Puna, get lower.
Nah.
Right? Now, what also, don't you have, like, ridiculous long, long arms?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's making
that helps
hard
too.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get separation, right?
Yeah.
Does that hurt you in the bench?
In the bench?
As far as, like, you can't do as much as everybody else?
Yeah, a little bit, but my strength shows on the field. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it pays off.
Mm-hmm.
Puna Ford is our guest here. You come from South Carolina.
Yes, a little country.
Tell us something about your hometown. You're from Hilton Head, right?
I mean, I was raised in Pritchardville, South Carolina, and I moved to Hilton Head around eighth grade.
Big town? small town?
No, not really, no.
What's the best thing to do in your hometown, Hilton Head, on a Friday night?
Really, I mean, I couldn't tell you. Honestly, I guess when I was in high school, I feel like a lot of my people in the area would come watch me and my team play.
It's really cool. And then you end up going to Texas.
Mm-hmm. He was a fullback in high school, too.
I'd like to see him. I'd like to see you. I think they could find a role to get you in a goal line package here.
I already talked to Chad about it. He said we'll see.
You really did? You went over and talked to him about it?
Yeah, like we were stretching one day. And like, uh-huh. I guess like Coach Harry was telling him like I was playing fullback in high school and stuff like that. And I told him, I was like, yeah, if you need another body, I mean, I'll block.
And your coach in high school, BJ Payne, and he was a pro wrestler, is that right?
Yeah.
What was his nickname?
I don't know. I never really believed him when he said that.
Oh, you didn't believe him?
No.
But he was, though.
I could see that.
Yeah.
You guys follow that stuff, don't you?
Yeah, like a little bit. Wrestling? Yeah.
I used to.
With his kids.
I kind of miss it.
So, his name is Payne.
Yeah, I know.
You have to play off that.
It would be Major Payne. There was a show called that.
All right, so have you ever been up that lighthouse there behind the 18th green at Hilton Head?
No, I've never been there.
Never been on that one? Uh-uh. No, but your high school coach, I read a story, Mike Varell wrote a really nice story about you in the Seattle Times talking to your high school coach, and it sounds like your coach was saying that you always do things the right way, and he's really happy for you that things have worked out here in Seattle. And where does that come from, that you always do those things the right way? The way you were raised?
I mean, yeah, I feel like I was always a pretty disciplined kid and whatnot. Like, I stayed in line and whatnot. So I kind of took that to everything I did.
Well, and he told a story about how you had 2-a-days back then, and you ran, 20 100-yard sprints between practice and then 20 more after the second practice?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so it was just to get in better shape?
I mean, yeah, because I knew, I had the team depend on me, and I had to play both ways, so I'm going to need to be in, the best shape I can be.
And you're an ROTC guy.
Yes.
In high school. Did you think you were going into the military? Was that a path for you, though?
Yes, that's what I was really originally going to do that. But then I started getting scholarship offers.
Yeah.
For colleges. So I kind of just, set that to the side. But that was my original plan, to go into the military.
Yeah. Where else did you get recruited besides Texas?
My top five was Kansas State. Oklahoma State, Louisville, before I got the Texas offer. I didn't get a Texas offer until Coach Sean took the job.
Oh, okay. But yeah, did you take all those trips and everything?
I only took 3 official visits.
Yeah.
Well, Oregon wanted you, too.
Yeah.
That was another good story in that Seattle Times story about how they wanted 3 faculty members to call Oregon and vouch for you as being a good kid, good player, and all of that. And it sounded like in a 2-hour period that 35 faculty members called to vouch for you. So that must have meant a lot to you when they did that.
I mean, I didn't know that happened until, I guess, when the article was posted. I didn't know that.
Does anybody call you Kalen?
Man, I only know one person who called me Kalen. And that's my roommate in college, Chris Nelson, that's his fiance. That's what she called me. His fiance called me Kalen. That's the only person who calls me Kalen.
Because that's your given
name.
Yeah,
that's my government name.
I thought he was going to say, the only guy that ever called me that, I beat the crap out of him. I was worried for Danny for a minute there.
Nah.
Especially with the reach he's got.
Yeah, that's right.
That's my name. I'm named after my father.
Now, how did you get the nickname Puna?
My grandma.
And she just, it was because you look like Pooh Bear, is that right?
I mean, do I?
I don't know. I could see it. You seem very friendly.
When you're little, cute little guy, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit.
How'd you choose Seattle? Because you go and don't, you get your choice of all 32 teams in the league after that. What made you pick Seattle? Because it's a long way from home and a long way from anywhere you've played.
Really, this is the only team who wanted me to come out for a top 30. So I came out here, and I took my visit. I really liked it. And then Coach Hurt, me and him go back a little bit to his days at Louisville. He was recruiting me and stuff like that, and I found out he was out here. So when I was out here, we chopped up a little bit, and then up the draft day. I mean, like, leading up the draft day, you feel me? Like, he kept in touch with me and stuff like that. And he just told me he wanted me here. So I just came.
You got a coach named Payne in high school and a coach named Hurt in the NFL. I'm detecting a theme.
Sounds like D-line coaches to me. Hey, how well did you know Mike Dixon when you were at Texas?
That's Michael. My dog, man.
You guys hung out?
Yeah, Mike, my dog. I sit next to him every day in the team meeting room.
Yeah. You guys hang out now?
Yeah, that's my dog. We stay in the same apartment complex.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and everything.
Cool. You ever seen a punter like that? You usually don't talk about punters. Just the way he can do all the weird things.
Like, it's unbelievable. I say this every day. I believe he's going to punt for like 20 years in the league and go down as one of the greatest ever.
Yeah, well, so far it looks good, and I'm not surprised. Yeah, some of the things he did. He was the MVP of the bowl game you guys played in.
Yeah,
I'd never heard of that before.
Anything else for Puna?
Yeah, Texas beat USC this last week. Did you give Pete Carroll a hard time about that at all?
No. I only gave Rasheem a hard time about it.
Oh, Rasheem. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. And so I went to Washington State. I never played, but I'm a huge Cougar fan. We're playing USC Friday, tomorrow night. You give us a good chance based on what you saw with Texas, what they did to USC?
I mean, as far as I feel like USC, the freshman quarterback, he struggled a little bit. And our defense is, like, really coached, you know, what Todd Orlando does for our defense is amazing. Like, from what I experienced during my 1 year that I had with them.
I was hoping he was going to go, who's Washington State?
I thought he was going to say that the Huskies are a really good program. that's what I was hoping for.
He knows who Washington State is. Washington State beat Texas in the Holiday Bowl, and our punter from Elma was a defensive player of the game.
That was before Puna ever got there.
He might be before he was born.
He is Puna Ford. Puna, it's great to get a chance to meet you. It's been a blast watching you play, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
All right, that is our Seahawks Spotlight. We'll be back to get you set for the game against the Cowboys next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. And I'll be excited to see how the Seahawks team is able to, the kind of energy that they bring into this game. Dave, you made the point, it's a younger team. And those kind of younger teams can be charged up by a home crowd environment and seeing exactly what. And look, it's the one thing that this franchise over the past 15 years has worked so hard to build is a great home field advantage.
Yeah. Did you guys, like, Puna Ford, like, it was like a slap in the face to how old I am now? Because he just seemed like a high school kid almost. He's really young looking, and, yeah, he was just very sweet kid, and he's a holy terror on the field.
I was just looking at his legs.
Yeah.
I mean, his legs are just huge.
Tree trunks.
Yeah.
What is he, 310?
Yeah, 310, like probably 5'11".
Yeah. Yeah, short guy. And that's the thing, you know, about leverage. He was talking about it. And when I was in the league, there was, and I'm sorry I'm not answering your question, Danny, but when I was in the league, there was a linebacker named Sam Mills. I've talked about him before, but they called him the Field Mouse. And he was 5'8", probably. And my buddy, Toy Cook, who went to Stanford, played with him. And he said that he would just, like, accidentally blow people up in practice. Like, oh, man, sorry about it. Because he was under everybody. And he was just so explosive. And, you know, after a few years in the league, I was like, man, I wish I was shorter. I wish I was, like, 5'9". Because then, like, for a guy like that, he's never going to have to worry about leverage. He's always going to be under everybody. And low man wins every time in the NFL. So... yeah, it's but yeah, this young
they
team.
Couldn't have given him a better nickname than the Field Mouse, and that sounds like a terrible nickname. Like, oh, what happened? The Field Mouse gave him a big hit.
He's tiny.
The Field Mouse.
That guy could hit.
He's a badass. I love Sam Mills. I took a picture when I got sick in Carolina. I was well enough to have somebody take a picture of me in front of the statue with Sam Mills, who tragically died a few years ago. But yeah, this is a young group, and you see it in this guy's face. And I just keep thinking about what Ken Norton said about these young guys and what they mean to this team. And it's a good group. It's a good group of guys that I feel like they can, maybe halfway through the season, maybe some it'll take a little bit less time, that they can start to step up, like we've been saying all week, and be this team. And having a young team is, youth is everything, especially with the way the whole economics of the NFL is structured right now. If you can get stuff out of the young guys, you know, that's what you have to do over the long haul. You have to commit to it.
I think they're going to be fired up, though, aren't they? I mean, on Sunday, yes. Especially those young guys, and I know that they've been out there, the rookies certainly for preseason games, but whole different deal for a regular season game, the way the crowd will get behind the team, and they should get a lift from that.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We've got the professor. We'll check on injuries. Not necessarily good news there. That's coming up next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we've learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess.
Guys, good to see you.
Are
nice
we going
to
win tomorrow
as well?
Night?
Yes.
Are we?
Yes.
I hope so. I want to be happy tomorrow night. I do.
I want you to be happy,
I want to be
too.
Happy every night, but I want to see us go 4-0.
You guys have won two out of three. Two out of the last three against USC. Let's go. Go Cougs.
I'll only accept that slightly because of your disdain for USC, because it's actually rooted in not trying to get under our skin.
I hate USC.
Yeah.
I do root for the Cougs. You think it's...
I'm rooting for Sparky. I want to see Herm Edwards on the shoulders of his players leaving Husky Stadium.
Yeah.
I love Herm.
I like Herm, too.
All right, guys, we learned today that our takes remain as hot as ever.
Yeah, I don't like seeing him win right now. Like, I'll be honest. Like, I'm kind of spiteful about it.
I am, too. I'd rather see him lose. Like, it sounds crazy, but it's like, oh, okay, now you win. Now you got the hot bats. Now you're hitting home runs. Nah.
I'd like to get on board with you guys, but I still believe that winning is better than losing. Okay.
It is, but...
Hey, Jess, can you tell all the other producers to use that quote?
Yes, yeah. I can.
There's the kind of insight you get.
Winning is better than losing?
Yeah. But Dave,
I'm cutting the audio right now.
Winning
so they
is...
That was pretty funny. I don't root for them to lose. I would say this, that my initial reaction when I find out that they've won is one of hostility, though. It's like, fine, now you win. But I'm not actively, I don't hope they lose.
Do you think Jerry heard that? I hope he didn't. Because we talked to him about 5 minutes later, and he didn't like a couple of my questions.
Because you were literally asking him to tell you exactly what they're going to do with their offseason and in the future with their positions.
That's because I was wondering what the plan is.
Yeah, and that's, I get, A, that is the only questions are about, like, okay, what are you going to do this offseason? And from his point, though, there's no reason to start spelling that out now.
No, I know.
In part because they might not know exactly what they're going to do and lay out all of the different possibilities. But, yeah, it's tough. I've become a big Mariners fan, and that's happened over the process of about the past 15 years. And I think that I feel a fan's resentment right now. It's not, it's the sort of feeling that you get when you have disappointment and then you've got this string of games that you know they're not going to make the playoffs. So you've stopped the bargaining process. I mean, whatever it is, the seven stages of grief, I'm in the anger stage right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, every time when they win 7-0 or 9-0, I mean, all those different things, and you go, well, okay, what happened against the Padres? What happened against the Blue Jays? What happened against the Rockies? And so you go back to those games and those series, and you wish that these, because you really felt like when they had the lead in June and July that they were going to be able to at least stay in it until the end of the season, and they were favored to do it, and didn't happen.
Jess, you're a very optimistic person.
Yes.
How do you keep from getting mad at your teams?
I don't. I just move on quickly. This is the first time since I left here. It was my 10th Mariner season. And it's the first season that I was emotionally affected by actually both wins and losses. I had the opportunity to report for the team this year. And I was only doing home weekends. So I did like 14 games. But they won 10 in a row. And so I was always around this like great environment and everything. And, you know, I was working the game where they took first place in June. And It was fantastic and everything, and I was so high about it. And then when they would lose, all of a sudden get swept, or lose to a division opponent, I found myself really mad. But I did the whole thing. Baseball's a long season, and you gotta move on.
Did you see what the A's did today?
Yeah, it was like 21-3.
21-3 over the Angels. I just saw that.
Somebody I follow, Danny Chow from The Ringer, tweeted out, "Thursday night football stinks" with that score, because it was 21-3.
We also learned today that we've had better teases.
And Washington State Thursday is coming up next. Are you ready for it, Jim?
Oh, yeah.
Do they have the right ankle bracelets this time? I'm sorry.
Wrist ankle bracelets. That's Kendrick's.
Yeah, it was a.
That's mean.
You're mean. That was.
That's not as mean as what I was going to say. What, Kendrick's was out with what?
An ankle injury.
I thought maybe it was day trading, and it wasn't here.
It's Danny David Moore. Washington State Thursdays
you
next.
Our tease for that.
I thought that was a good one. You guys didn't like it, so I know your feeling now when you say some dumb joke and you laugh hysterically. I thought the day trading thing was pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought the ankle bracelet one was quick.
The ankle bracelet one was good. I liked the day trading one. I thought it was solid. I thought it was good work out of you.
It was all right. But Jim, like 5 minutes beforehand, was like, "I've got something. When you go to break, I'm going to say something."
I got a zinger.
Wait a minute.
He's just little holding up his fingers like, "I've got something."
Do you think that I'm sitting here 5 minutes before I'm ready to say something, and I'm holding it, that I'm going to wait for the right time?
It was about a minute. It was about... You did that.
What, like, the day trading thing? It wasn't a minute. Might have been 20 seconds. As soon as I heard that he was on the injury report, I thought, well, maybe, yeah, he's out day trading.
The fact that a thought occurred to you before it exited your mouth is progress in my book.
Okay. Thanks, Jess.
Finally, today we learned why Danny and Dave won't ever root for USC.
There's no scenario in which I will root for USC. I just never liked them. Who likes USC?
Well, I always hated them because they're the one Pac-10 school at the time that didn't recruit me.
So you had more of a personal... They also didn't recruit me, so we've got that in common.
That's true.
Well, it's also
Danny, I ran faster than a 6.5 40.
Yeah, I sent him my tape.
Isn't it also the...
My scotch tape.
Isn't it also the...
You should have quit while you were ahead.
Speaking of...
See, that was a great one from Wyman. You should have quit.
Oh, that was pretty good they got cut off there because it wasn't... Yeah. I hate their song.
I don't like their song either.
I wouldn't hate it if they didn't play it so much.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories, Blaine Newnham, who was a longtime columnist at the Seattle Times. I love that Husky Stadium, as soon as they start playing the stupid song, just booze. Just booze rain down on them. And Blaine Newnham, who was covering the game, the Huskies against the Trojans, was like, "It's come to this. The Husky faithful are booing their team because they weren't ahead by enough." This was like in 92 or 93. And I was like, "No, you idiot. We were booing the song." And he had to write an apology a couple days later. Like that went to print that he thought that the fans were booing the Husky team because they weren't ahead by enough.
Oh, this isn't like a tweet. Oh,
no.
Because you said it was early 90s. I am with the program.
There was a time when we didn't have these fancy computing machines, Jessamine.
I don't know that world, Danny.
I can't rip Blaine. I love Blaine.
Yeah, I love Blaine too, but that was really, really funny that happened. Anything else today? We've learned all we're going to learn?
No, but tomorrow's going to be a great show because I'm going to have another Smoke and Lock and I'm undefeated, Danny.
That's right. He is undefeated.
1-0-1.
Yeah. I thought about it long and hard where I was like, I hope you don't ever pick the Huskies again.
I was right, though, wasn't I?
You were.
Double-digit winner in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, you were. You were. It was a nerve-wracking time there. I want to thank Puna Ford for joining us. Jerry DePoto, who always makes time for us on Thursdays. John Clayton. Jessamine McIntyre is our producer. Curtis and Brian, both back working the board today. And for the three of us, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.